So here we are back in Luke's Gospel with another parable, probably the best known parable potentially. And as Rowan alluded to before, it's been a very significant parable, I think, for a lot of people with the message that it gives us. So we're going to think about that this morning, and it's the third in a series of three parables, and we'll think about that in a moment as well. When I was about 8 or 9 years of age, and apologies if I've told this before, but it's you know, like when I was 8 or 9, I thought this will make a good sermon illustration one day. So I may have used it previously, but I guess I went to some effort when I was 8 or 9 to develop this sermon illustration, so I should use it at least more than once. But we lived in Bundanoon on the Southern Highlands, and I just had one of those days. One of those days with my mum and my dad where I just felt unloved. Went to mum, tried to get a hug, a bit of love, she was busy. Went to dad, notice I tried mum first because she was more likely to give me some love. Dad less likely, dad no love there, no joy. I thought, well, I'm going to make a statement. And so I got my little bag and I packed it full of clothes. I got my trusty bicycle and I hockey strapped the bag onto the back of the bicycle, onto the luggage rack, and I headed out of town. I headed out of Bundanoon. Where was I heading? I didn't know. It didn't matter. The world was my oyster. The wide open road. I was living the dream. Then I realized that my $13 that I had, all the money in the world, I'd left at home. So I turned the bike around and I went back home, walked in, and there was not even a "where have you been?" There was nothing. They hadn't even missed me. And I thought, that's it, with greater resolve, I'm definitely out of here. I won't be missed. It'll probably be weeks before they report me gone. And so I got my $13, which back then, in around 1980 or whenever this was substantial savings, just quietly. And so I took my $13 and my bag and my bike, and I headed out of Bundanoon on a road. Not a road to nowhere, it was a road to G. And if you know what the G might be as you're heading out of Bundanoon in the right direction, it's Goulburn. So I was heading for Goulburn. I was at some stage probably going to hit a freeway. I don't know what I was going to do about that. But I was on my bike, I'm heading for Goulburn. I've got my money, my $13, I've got everything I need, and I'm heading on my trusty bike, and then the handlebars fell off my bike. Of all the times I'd ridden my bike, the handlebars had never fallen off, but on that day, the handlebars fell off. And there I was on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere, a long way from getting to the freeway yet. And then I heard the familiar sound of the HQ Kingswood that my dad drove coming down the road. There was a fork in the road, which there's a hotel in the middle of, and the guy who was the son of the hotel manager had asked me as I was going past, he said, "G'day." He must have ratted me out, I think, and told my dad which way to go. That's my story of running away. Notice that it was a very active exercise. It was not a passive exercise. I made the decision to go, and when I came back and discovered that I hadn't been missed in any way, and it just underlined to me how greatly unloved I was, I actively got up and went again. The prodigal son is one of three parables about things that are lost, but the first two are very different. The first two are very passive. The prodigal son is very active. To explain it, the lost sheep. A sheep is dumb, we know that. A sheep wanders off. It's not like it sort of plotted to leave the shepherd. It's just a bit silly and off it goes. And when it comes back, it doesn't say the shepherd grabbed it, brought it back and said, "You stupid sheep, how dare you? You silly animal for doing that." It's a sheep. So it's a little bit passive in the whole situation. The coin is even more passive. It's not like the coin got up and rolled away, is it? The coin was actually dropped somewhere or misplaced. It's got nothing to do with the coin or the coin's intent. But when we get to the parable of the prodigal son, suddenly we've got intent. We've got an activeness on what is on the side of what is lost, to be lost. But there's another part, the activeness comes in, which doesn't in the first two. With the first two, the sheep could not find its way home. It was lost and passive to be lost and to be found. The coin could not find its way home. It was passive and not able to get itself lost or found. But the son Well, the son's different, isn't he? Have you noticed? He can plan to go, and he can also decide to come back. So there's a lot of active stuff on the side of the son. He demands generosity, for example. As we start, we're confronted with this very entitled young man. Maybe for whatever reasons, it says there was a man who had two sons, but the younger one says to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate. Give me my share of the estate." So he can have what he is due to him now, and so that he can do what he wants with it. He's very active in his demanding of generosity. But then after he gets what he wants, we're told not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. He's very active then in getting up, collecting everything he's got, putting it on his bike, his trusty bike, and going. Not only that, he's also very active in his own squandering of his wealth with wild living. But then there's a turnaround in the story, isn't there? You see, but his activity in it continues. You see, he happens to fall on hard times, which is a bit outside of his control. But the way he responds to it is within his control. We're told that he gets a job, he's feeding pigs, and it says to us that he regrets his actions and his leaving. It says that he longs to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs are eating, but no one would give him anything. And so in light of his situation, he goes about doing something to rectify it, or at least he hopes. And so he decides to go back once again, very active. He decided to leave. Now he's deciding to come back, different to sheep, different to coins. I will set out, go back to my father. He's decided that life with his father, even if only all that he gets is to be a servant in his father's household, it's going to be better than what he's currently got in this distant land where nobody will give him anything. So he says, I'll set out, go back to my father. And so he gets up. He's in control of his own destiny as much as he can, and he goes to the father. And so just to highlight that context again, lost sheep, very passive, lost coin, very passive, lost son, very active. I said last week as we looked at the first two parables that this week we would be looking at the third parable with some other nuances that it brings in. It deals with some added complexities which the sheep and the coin don't. Now, as we look at the wider context, it may be that Jesus was being very thoughtful with this, giving them a couple of parables where people could go, oh yeah, that's a thing, that's a situation, that happens. But maybe the third one is where we're being asked more to go, ah, I actually play a role in this. I'm just not lost and then just found. There is a part that I play, perhaps. So the son is very active, this younger son. But the other thing as well that's huge in this story, and I think one of the reasons why this parable is so popular, is that there is grace. There is grace upon grace upon grace upon grace. I mean, there's even grace when this entitled young man says to his father, would you hurry up and die? If you're not going to do that, then give me what is mine. And so grace upon grace, he says, give me my share. And what does the father do? He divides everything he has and he gives him his share, which is amazing. But then when he goes and squanders it all, grace upon grace, and decides to come back, we're told this in the parable, his father saw him. And doesn't say he was filled with anger. It says he was filled with compassion for him. That's interesting that he's filled with compassion. It almost makes you wonder whether the very way that he walked, maybe it was the clothes that he was not wearing, highlighted to the father that my son's in a bad place. But there is no, well, he deserved what he got. Instead, there's compassion for him. And grace upon grace, he runs to his son. Grace upon grace, he throws his arms around him. Grace upon grace, he kisses him. Have you had enough grace yet? Because there's more. After that, we're told that the father says to the servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him, grace upon grace. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet, grace upon grace. Bring the fattened calf and kill it, grace upon grace for everybody except the fattened calf. There's grace. Have you had enough grace yet? Because there's more. We're told that then the father says this with regards to his son returning. He says, let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and he's alive again. He was lost and he's found. It's not just, it's okay to come back. It's a blessing that you have come back. And so just for a moment, I just want to highlight, this is good stuff. This is real good. God's good grace poured out to those who would come. Don't leave home without it, God's grace. Don't go home today without it. It's not deserved. And that's the key. That's the thing about grace, isn't it? It's not deserved. I knew somebody once who once said to me that they struggled in their faith because they didn't believe they deserved grace. And I said, but that's grace. If you deserve it, it's not grace. So just for a moment, let's remember the context of these three parables, or as I like to call them, the context of the trilogy lost, the three lost parables. Before the parable of the lost sheep, before the parable of the lost coin, before the parable of the lost son, these people said of Jesus, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. That was spoken by the Pharisees. Now, interestingly, Jesus had eaten with a Pharisee. We looked at that a chapter earlier. Before he's eating with sinners, he was eating in the home of a very prominent Pharisee, we're told. And so Jesus is eating with anybody who will eat with him, but some of the people he is eating with don't want him to eat with others. The Pharisees instead don't want grace to be offered to sinners. In fact, they just want grace to be reserved for those who deserve it, which is a ludicrous reality, is it not? They want grace reserved for those who deserve it, but grace, by definition, is for those who don't deserve it. The reason being is because the Pharisees believed that they were entitled. Not all Pharisees, but many Pharisees. They thought that they had earned whatever it was that God might give them. What a ridiculous notion to think that you could earn what God has given you. And just for a moment, it's ridiculous to think that we could earn Jesus' blood. Isn't it? It's ridiculous to believe that we have somehow made ourselves worthy of Jesus, the Son of God, who knew no sin, to die for us. That's ridiculous. But this third parable is really aimed at these guys, I think. Not just at them, because we learn something from this, don't we? Don't we? Haven't we learned this morning? We've received grace upon grace upon grace upon grace. We don't deserve it. I hope we've learned that. I hope it's been underlined again if you've already known it. But there's an older brother in the story, isn't there? And when we get to the older brother, we like to draw a connection between the older brother and Pharisees that Jesus maybe was talking to. The coin was passive, the sheep was passive, the son, the younger son, seems to be to have been active. What is the older son? Is he passive or is he active? Well, he's actually the strange thing that today we call passive-aggressive. The older son is passive-aggressive. He's heard that his younger brother has come home, and that's good news, according to the dad, and so they're celebrating, they're having a massive party. Now, I was at the Ben's place last night. We had a little party there of time together, and then I got in my car and I went home and got out in Lucinda Drive, and there was a party going on. There was a party going on, and the people who were having the party, somebody was having a 21st, and you know who that person is, some of you. Their parents aren't here this morning because they're recovering maybe from the party. So maybe they're online and say good day to them. It was a really big party happening. We could hear it, Nathan and I, when we got out of the car. It was loud. They're having a ball. Well, that's what's happened here. There's this noise of this party. And the older brother, he's like, well, what's going on? He asks the servant, what's going on? And he hears that his younger brother has come home. And would you believe it, his dad is throwing a party for him. And so we're told that the older brother becomes angry and refuses to go in. And in this moment, he highlights how entitled he is. Because he says, yet you never gave me even a young goat to have a party with my friends. That's what he says to the father. When the father comes out and says, will you come in? And he said, this son of yours squandered everything you had. He's come back. You've killed a fatted calf. You've never given me a goat even to have a little quiet, you know, night in with my mates. You haven't even done that for me. You've given me nothing. You've given him everything. Entitled. Entitled. One of the bizarre things about this is that both the sons, young and old, have been given everything, which we may have skipped over. To just highlight it to you, the older son, just like the younger, has received grace upon grace upon grace. You see, when the younger son says, hey, Dad, can you divide your property? He says, I want my inheritance. We're told that the father divided the property between them. He actually gave the property to his younger son and his older son. The older son's actually received an inheritance. In fact, probably what would have happened in that time is the father would have given his house to his older son. The younger son probably didn't get actual property, maybe just got money, which is why he could gather everything up and go. Whereas the older son would have actually received the family property. And the father would be allowed to live there until he died as a way of honoring him as the father. But the home the father now sleeps in belongs to his son. And his son has the audacity to say to him, you've never even killed a goat for me. One of the things about entitlement is it doesn't recognize the grace that is there. Jesus highlights that there is grace for everybody. There's grace for tax collectors. There's grace for sinners. There's grace for prostitutes. I'll eat with every single one of them. And he even says, I'll eat with Pharisees. There is grace for everyone. There is a spot at the table for everyone who will come. There is no one who is left out unless they want to stay outside and not come to the party. And so the context is the lost are hungry, they know it. They know and appreciate grace, but Pharisees, not all of them, but on the whole, many of them are not hungry. They don't know grace. They don't think they need grace. They don't even see that they've received grace, and therefore they won't extend grace. And so the older son, he's not going to extend any grace to his younger brother. No way. Because he hasn't even realized the grace that he's been shown. There's a song by David Crowder, which we sing here, which has these words. There's hope for the hopeless and all those who've strayed. Come sit at the table. Come taste the grace. There's room for the weary, rest that endures. Earth has no sorrow that heaven can't cure. There's grace there for you. There's grace there for me. If you don't think you deserve it, you're right. But it's there. And it's offered freely to you and to me, to each and every one of us. The invitation is to come and sit at the table of grace. The invitation is to come and taste the grace. And I tell you what, if you are so weary of being judged, and if you are so weary of realizing you're not good enough, and if you're so weary of being broken down by others who won't extend grace to you or love or forgiveness, there's a rest if you'll come. And it's not a fleeting rest. It's a rest that endures. It is a deep rest. David Crowder reminds us there is no sorrow here on earth that doesn't find a cure at the table of our Lord. So I want to give you an opportunity, just briefly. We don't have much time. Very briefly, I want to give you an opportunity just to sit in silence for a moment with this simple question. You see, this parable, there's a younger son, there's an older son, there's even a father who has shown grace upon grace, and yet it hasn't been appreciated. You might find yourself in your life at the moment that there is a character in this parable that you relate to at this moment. Maybe there's something in this parable that is helpful for you to hear and apply to your heart this morning. I don't know what it is, but I want to give you the opportunity to sit with it and think of what that might be. So I'm going to give you 30 seconds, which might feel like 5 minutes, and then I'm going to pray. Just encourage you. What does this parable mean for you right now? How does it intersect with your life and your heart this morning? Heavenly Father, we're sorry that we keep running away from you. We thank you for receiving us back. We're sorry for the times where we don't see your grace. We're sorry for the times when we feel entitled. We ask, Lord, that you would help us to open our eyes up to your grace and your love and your forgiveness and your acceptance. Lord, may those things flood our heart. That we might be people who extend that same grace, love, forgiveness, and acceptance to those around us.